When we think about God's providence, generally three areas come to mind. Conversion, that's what we're talking about with the book. Sometimes it's health. We're praying for God's providence as far as sickness. A person will recover from that. Doctors can properly diagnose that. They can have surgery and that's going to go well. Or it's probably going to be related to job, something like that. Those would be, in my mind, the three areas where people generally seek divine help and they're asking for providential help. We stopped last time on page 11. We've got pages 11 and then 12 that'll kind of shift gears for us. Page 11.4, after reading about the men singing while Michael and Junetta changed into their baptismal garments or clothing, what would you say about the men's hearts? Now, he's talking here, and there's kind of a follow-up question here, but the men's hearts, these were the guys, if you remember back as far as the book, they had come, must have been pretty late at night, it was around midnight. Harpers had been to that area of town in Nashville, and last week they said it is definitely not a good area. So, in the daytime, it's not a good area. So, you know, it's late at night. And I think we want to make sure that we factor that in here, because if you have some guys that are willing to come out at night, I remember visiting with one of the elders way back when. We were at our house and involved in a project, and it was, 10:30, 10 o'clock at night, something like that. There was going to be an early day the next day, and we got a call. It was either Billy or Franklin Spry had gone into the hospital. And that was over in, I think it was in Elkhart, I think it was Mishawaka, when we were out in Millersburg at the time. Now, that's not exactly a trip across town. So by the time you drive roughly an hour out, it's already 10, already 10:30, you spend some time with them, figure out what's going on, drive back to my house. I think we left the vehicles involved there except for the one that we took. And then, that person gets over to his house, and then maybe he's got to be up at 4 or 5 the next morning. He's gotten just a few hours sleep. One of the things that really impressed me, I know it's not about conversion, but if you remember Catherine Miranda, the accident that she had, she was at LaGrange at the time and still is. And even though they weren't members here, I went over, and that was, again, one of the hospitals in South Bend. And you know the distance from LaGrange to South Bend. Again, it's not just across the street. I don't know. Fred and Andy were up there. I'm guessing by the time I got up there, it was probably 11 o'clock. It was later in the evening. No, it couldn't have been that late. It was a Wednesday night. I remember that. We announced it on a Wednesday night. So got home, got Teresa home, and then headed out there. So I'm probably up there by 9. And I don't remember. They stayed up there, I think, until 1 or 2 in the morning. I didn't stay quite that long. But I thought, those two guys have to get up early the next morning. And by the time they get home, bed 12, 1, they're getting up at maybe 4 o'clock, 3 hours. And, their jobs are not the easiest jobs, and I think Fred's since retired, but they weren't the easiest jobs in the world. And that really, I thought, spoke well of those two elders, that they were willing to make the trip, willing to spend time over there, willing to, do it all and be glad that was done. So when you think about these guys in the book, they're willing to drive to this section of town, which is really bad. They're willing to do that late at night, and they're doing that for what purpose? Steve? Yeah. Hey, you're going to be immersed into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins. This is very important. We're rejoicing with you. I don't know if it's fair to say that they put their lives on the line or not, going out late that night in that section of town, but I suppose that is at least possible. So when you look at the question, what would you say about the hearts of these fellows? And did they show up in sweatpants? I mean, they showed up. They were well-dressed. Now, I'm not saying that if you're going to show up, you've got to be dressed to the nines, okay? But I mean, I thought that little detail was interesting, that it showed that they really did care. They wanted to make an impression on these people to the point that this is important. This is something very, very significant. So once again, going back to the question, what would you say about their hearts? Joyful. All right, joyful, godly, in the right place. They were people who were encouragers. All those answers will be right. And then you have a related but somewhat different question. Why was Mike, he of course is the fellow who became a Christian, he and his wife, why was Mike concerned about the time and the thinking that the loud singing would wake up the neighbors? All right, there was that as far as the actual time. But what else? Yes, we can add a couple things to that, but that's the overall answer. He was spiritually immature. His thinking was not spiritual. His thinking was worldly. His thinking was secular. He was embarrassed. He was worried that that was going to maybe create some kind of incident.
But
and you have...
Was he really worried about waking people up so much as worried about the reaction of waking them up, maybe?
It could have been, yeah. But the thinking was spiritually immature.
Yeah.
We might have to adjust some of the details there, but yes, he had that immature thinking. Do you think you have today some immature thinking when you're dealing with people who either need to become a Christian or they've recently become a Christian?
No.
Sure. What would some examples of that be?
Well, even after a person's converted, especially if they're converted out of a religious group of some kind or another, it's very difficult to not be thinking back about the things that they've dealt with in the past.
Mm-hmm. You know, God is up there as far as a higher priority, but actually putting him first, that's a struggle for a lot of people. What others will think, what others might want to do to them, consequences, those things sometimes loom larger in the mind. All right, let's ask ourselves the following questions, 5A, B, and C. Should immersion into Christ be urgent? We talked about this at length last week. Yes, we talked about our Pastor Martin and so forth. He said, well, what happens if the baptistry pipes burst? Well, let somebody else handle that. You can take the person out and baptize them somewhere else while somebody else takes care of the leak. Sherman?
It'd be interesting to know in our class how many were baptized on off night from the church night.
Okay. How many were baptized on a church night or day? All right, what do we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. About 17 or 18. All right, and then the other. Oh, wow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's interesting. All right, that was the off day where we weren't at services, quote unquote. That's interesting. That tells me that there may not have been as much urgency. Now, every once in a while, you will have in some congregations. I've seen this more down south, and I've seen this more with congregations that would be heavier as far as an African-American makeup. But I have seen some cases where they will have an invitation before they even start the Bible class. Or if it's not then, they'll have an invitation before they go into the service. And I've thought over the years, that's an interesting approach. Margaret, have you ever seen that? Okay, I can say, I've never been to a congregation that wasn't predominantly African-American, and that maybe just be a cultural thing. But I've often thought there's some wisdom in that in my mind. Here's a person who comes in and they are struggling through the service. I'm thinking about being baptized, or I'm thinking I need to get this off my chest. And I can remember the night I was baptized, it was a Wednesday night. And I can't remember a thing about the class because I was so consumed. Hey, is it time to go? You know, which song is it? And it would have been so much better had they said, let's do this before. And then, oh, great. Now, I still might not have thought too much about the class because I would have been preoccupied with what happened. But still, I do think that there's some wisdom in offering that to people, perhaps before rather than after, maybe even both. So if you've never seen that, that does happen in some places. And like I say, it may not be a bad practice. Anybody else? All right, let's go back to point B. How would I react if I received a phone call in the middle of the night to come to the building to witness a baptism? All right. I think this congregation, for the most part, would. And we've had times where we've actually called some people. Now, if you didn't get one of those calls, it wasn't because we thought, well, you know, he probably won't show up. They don't want to come. That wasn't our thinking. But our thinking was, we've got somebody here. Somebody wants to be baptized. And we really don't want to try to pull somebody from 45 minutes away, getting back to the urgency. So who do we have who's close? Who do we have here that will probably be in a position, you know, you really don't want to call somebody away from work. But who do we have that can probably come and we can have at least a small group and do that? And I can't, for the life of me, think of anybody that we've ever tried to reach out to from here and call and say, could you come? And they said, oh, no, we don't want to come. So I really think that speaks well of us over the years. Sherman, you had an additional point?
If I remember right, when I read the book, the people that showed up were elders and deacons. Does that mean they didn't contact anybody else? Or did I read that wrong? Did it say that?
I'd have to go back and look. I don't remember that specific point. It seemed like, is that a large congregation, you think?
They said it was the elders and deacons.
Okay, nobody else besides them?
But they just mentioned elders and deacons.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, but it seems like to me if it was others, they would have mentioned that too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you always try to, you know, bear in mind, again, at 1 o'clock in the morning, I might have a pretty short list as far as who I'm calling. You know, I don't want to call somebody who's 95 and scare them out of the wits, or ask somebody who is not comfortable driving at night, would you come out and witness the baptism? Now, you might try to pick somebody up, or if it's the dead of winter. You know, obviously there are some considerations here that you have to look at and hopefully use some good judgment. But the point that's being made is certainly valid and certainly good. And I do think congregationally we would do very, very well in this regard, and that speaks very well of us.
And if it's not the nicest part of town, you maybe don't want women and children.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and if it were, especially in our area, for example, the dead of winter, have somebody come out at 1 o'clock, slide off in a ditch, you know, with small kids and trying to wade through the snow, and somebody gets frostbite or freezes to death. Right. You just say, okay, you know, we're going to not have anybody here tonight, or we're going to be very limited as far as the number of people who are here for that reason. So, good thought.
It doesn't really say. All it says is that none of us expected to see the elders and deacons standing out there in front of the building. So whether there were other people there or not, it doesn't say.
Okay. All right, point C, are we sometimes too reserved in our singing? In other words, to state it differently, are we sometimes too concerned about our singing skills or personal performance? Sure. And people have different reasons for that. Sometimes it's shame, sometimes it's embarrassment. Could be a lot of different reasons. But hopefully that is overcome with time. All right, anything that you want to add or ask over that chapter that we just finished? Chapter 1 is done. So, we've got 15 minutes left. We'll see how far we get in Chapter 2. All right, here we get to the action points and the note card. He's got on there Acts chapter 20, verse 28. Now, Teresa thought, sometimes she gives me feedback after a class or after a sermon, and I usually try to listen. Well, I don't always agree with her. Sometimes I think, well, just like anything else. But sometimes, you know, she says you should have done it this way instead of that way. And, you know, those pointers are good. I appreciate help from anybody. I really do. So we talked about memorization. And she said it sounded like last week you were against memorization. I'm not. I'm all for memorization. So if you want to make up some note cards, if you want to, as we go through the study, try to memorize some extra verses, that's great. I'm supportive of that. The point that I wanted to communicate, though, and may not have done a very good job of expressing it, we're not going to have any kind of forced memorization. We're not going to have any memory quizzes, and I'm not going to try to shame anybody into memorizing something. So how you deal with the note cards, how you deal with the verses, that's perfectly fine. But he suggests, as far as getting back to the note cards, and this is something that I do think would be worthwhile, make a list of 10 people in your sphere of influence who are not members of the body of Christ. And mentally, we could probably go through and say, well, okay, there's this one and that one and this relative and this friend and this co-worker and so forth. But in part, one of the reasons to do that, and this is not something that we've pushed too much to this point, but the elders picked up about 100 copies of Muscle and the Shovel. And we announced last year that instead of having the typical fall meeting, we were going to divert that money into 100 copies of Muscle and the Shovel. Now, we've given some of those away for various reasons. When we have somebody that comes to services, if they're in our local area or there are non-Christians passing through, we do our best to get a copy of Muscle and a Shovel to them. We've got Gary that's working on that, and we've got Jeff that's also trying to take responsibility for that to make sure that that gets into the hands. One of the things that I learned before we got deacons, or Jeff is a deacon and Gary involved with that, is that before you just put a book in somebody's hands, I did that on a Wednesday night, maybe 2 months ago or so, and then it dawned on me, I'm not sure that person likes to read. That might not be the smartest thing in the world. You can, hey, read this, would you? Well, if the person doesn't like to read, maybe the person can't read. You still have some individuals who do not read or do not read very well. So you might ask and say, do you like to read? And if you get a positive response to that, then offer the book. But we do have some books that can be passed out to people that we know. They are $10 a pop. So they are obviously more expensive than a tract. So we might have been with tracts less discriminating when it came time to pass those out. But we're not trying to economize and say, well, unless you meet all these specific criteria, you can't have a book. So we do want to be free with them. We also want to bear in mind the fact that they are more costly than tracts. and make effective use of them. So if you want to start making a prospect list and do the other things that we have here, that's a good way to do it. I mentioned, and Margaret took a couple of these, but we have some labels on the bulletin board. And when that list of labels is gone, we'll put up another bunch. And those labels, there's information there. This is a book from has our congregational name. And if you need more information, if you need a place to check out where you can worship as the New Testament describes, here's where you go. And there's a place there at the bottom of the label to put your information in as far as your name, phone number, those kinds of things. So if you think that that book might go beyond that person, or maybe you're giving it to a person that you don't know very well, there's a certain situation where you think, well, I'm just going to hand this person the book. You might have some of those labels handy. Put that in the book. Fill it out before you actually pass it down to someone. All right, Acts chapter 20. Christ bought the church with his blood. Acts 20 verse 28 is a very important verse. And it mentions too, when we deal with people, do not prejudge. Now, that's difficult. I will tell you from my perspective, as I'm talking to a person, it is almost impossible for me to eliminate any kind of thought as far as prejudgment. That is, as you're looking at a person, you're talking to a person, you think, hey, he's interested, she's interested, it looks like there's a good chance that this individual will become a Christian, it doesn't look like this person is going to ever become a Christian. It would be great if we're soil testers. Very few of us, if any of us, are going to be successful in testing the soil. There have been some people that I've thought that would become a Christian almost immediately, and yet year after year after year went by, they were never converted. They died in sin. Other people, I thought that person will never become a Christian in 1,000 years. Well, lo and behold, they did. And they were one of the strongest members of that local congregation. If you were in sales, I think you'd have that same problem. As you're going up and you're trying to sell somebody something, you're sizing them up. What are you thinking if you're the sales lady or the salesman? Well, we'll make it a little more specific. You work at a car dealership. Somebody comes on the lot. What are you thinking probably? Oh, here it comes. All right, I'll start on my left and head over to the right.
Is he going to buy a car or not?
All right, is he a looker or is he a buyer? So it comes in maybe over the lunch hour and you're thinking, okay, well, it's lunch. People generally don't have any time to really be serious shoppers, so he's probably a tire kicker. He's probably not going to have time to check it out and sign a contract before lunch. But okay, you're thinking that. What else?
What kind of car he's going to want?
All right. Is my commission going to be great? Is he going to want the Yugo or is he going to want the Escalade over there? So depending on which way it goes, I might send him over to the junior salesman and maybe hope for somebody that's going to come in a little bit later that's going to be a better purchaser as far as my commission. So you have that. What else? All right, I think that's probably going to be the other thing. You're looking at the guy, he comes in a clunker. And I mean, you know, the muffler's going a hoot, and it's all rusted out. You're probably thinking he doesn't have very much money. Or the car that he can buy is not going to probably net me much of a commission. So does he have the ability to afford? What's his credit going to be? And not only might you evaluate the car, you evaluate the guy when he gets out. What does he look like? Is he well-dressed? Does he look like he has money? And so forth. Does he look shady? Does he look shifty? A lot of things, if you were in sales, you'd be thinking about those kinds of things. And we make judgments as well, don't we? Where else do we make judgments? I mean, we might not think that we're so judgmental, but we really are. Sure. You know, how comfortable are they and do the dress and so forth? Anybody ever had blood taken at the doctor's office? All right, most of us have. What happens if you had an experience like I had not too long ago? The nurse has a bunch of tattoos on her. And you can see, and you can see them. Oh, yeah, I mean, they're exposed. Now, she's not wearing shorts, but I mean, just about every piece of skin that you can see. And there's a bunch. She's all tattooed up. All right, what do you think? That wasn't what was going through my mind, but that might be. What do you think?
Do I really want her to do this?
Yeah. You know, does she have something that I don't want, okay? You know, really, I mean, those thoughts went through my mind. Now, she's a perfectly nice lady, the person that I'm thinking of, and there's nothing wrong with her, but just that visual, I just don't really associate that. Maybe that's my background, and maybe I'm just prejudice when it comes to medical people and tattoos. But you know, to see all that ink from somebody in that business, it just kind of, the first time I saw it, I mean, it just kind of had to step back. And the last time I saw it. But you know, as Christians, we should try to not prejudge people. I mean, she's a perfectly fine nurse, and sometimes you can just get so far off, and in the spiritual realm, you really do a disservice to somebody.
Did she drive
black? Yeah. I mean, she was. I see where you're headed with that, Tracy. I got the inference. So, but yeah, she's a fine nurse. Never had any difficulty with her. But again, you know, I think if she probably wore longer sleeves, it might be a little more consoling. Okay. Let's see. Let's go down to point two. Pray for these people. When we think about our contact list, we should be praying for those folks. We might pray for them for a lot of different reasons. We might pray for them because their kids are going through a rough time. We might be praying for them because they're looking for a new job, they're trying to sell their house, a lot of things. But for the people that you know, try to pray for them that they can be taught the gospel. Now, I will tell you something. If you pray for them that they be taught, what might God do? He might say, you're the one who needs to be the teacher, buddy. But I mean, still, that's a valid thing. And as that moves forward, pray for courage and all those things. Anything you want to add or ask before we look at point three?
I think if we're praying for these people, we ought to also be kind of looking for an opening.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I don't know that we'll get to tonight, but that's something that we certainly do want to mention. We want to be conscious of that there needs to be an opening. Tied in with point two and Carol's point, pray that God will bless you with courage, wisdom, and an opportunity to have something better for them a little later. Now that goes back to part of the book. You may remember, and we can't get this far tonight, we've only got about 5 minutes left, but you may remember that as the conversation unfolds between Mr. Mike and Randall, what's the gift that's used? The donut. The Krispy Kreme donut. And there's the line there, I might have something for you a little later that's even better. So I've got some thoughts on that. But anyway, we'll deal with that at a later time. But pray for an opportunity, look for an opening, try to initiate some kind of conversation. Then he mentions three instances from the New Testament where we have a Christian engaging in an evangelistic situation, one-on-one evangelism or teaching. What would one of those times be? All right, Acts chapter 8. That was my answer as well. As far as the first blank, I think that's a great answer. What else might we put in there? All right, Acts chapter 16, you have the case of Lydia. You've got Paul and Silas, some information about them in Acts chapter 16. I also cited that chapter. And then another one? All right, that would be good. That wasn't the one that I chose. Priscilla and Aquila, Acts chapter 18. Now, he was someone who was headed in the right direction. He just needed a little help. That would be Apollos, but Priscilla and Aquila sat down with him. Anybody else have an answer in there they want to share?
I
have
Luke 19 with Zacchaeus.
Okay, that would be great. Yeah, Jesus says, calls to him, come down from the tree and so forth. So that's a wonderful example, Betty. Thank you. Anybody else? All right, that would be good. Acts chapter 16, about verse 30 through 33 would be the key verses there. So yes, his group. Anybody else? Okay. Let's see what we've got here at the bottom of the page, point five. How can these three instances help equip us as we deal with people?
Well, there are some hints there, like Aquila and Priscilla, when they taught him further, they didn't just blurt out in front of the thing, hey, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. They were tactful.
We've got examples. We see some things that worked and worked well. We see some things that didn't always work very well. And it's just like today. You can learn from positive examples. You have some examples which are also negative. And if you take those and you say, well, that may not be exactly what I'm dealing with, but here is something similar. Parents go through that with kids, don't they? Parent is having a difficult time. Somebody else talks to them and says, well, it wasn't quite like that way for us, but we had something similar. You know, child wouldn't go to bed, or the child went to bed and wouldn't stay asleep or wouldn't stay in bed, and here's what we did. Here's how we tried to solve the matter. Turning the page, literally, to page 13, let's try, I'm sorry, Sherman?
Back to that last question. I think another thing is, we think about what we're going to do, what our performance. We don't think about their eagerness of what to learn. I think all these examples we saw, they were eager. They jumped into the chance to be baptized.
Yeah. And that's, I think, one of the things that we can use as far as maybe not an example that we follow, but an example that we profit from. we see that there will be some people. Once they see what's right, and Stan, I think, gives an example of that as well, as far as his earlier material. So, but yeah, a couple things there that you can associate with that point. Thank you. Let's see if we can figure in the first point of the discussion. What's revealed about Michael that demonstrates his worldliness? Okay.
The Hollywood handshake, what did he call it? Salute? Hollywood salute? We call it the verb.
Yeah. Ephesians 2:2 would be a good reference for that, where Paul talked about, you know, walking according to the course of the world. But there are some people, they are absolutely focused on the world. The illustration that I put in here, anybody know who Kevin O'Leary is? Kevin O'Leary?
No, I don't.
Shark Tank?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the Mr. Wonderful, they call him. If you've ever seen that show, he's apparently a Canadian. Anybody see what he wants to do? Nobody knows, really?
I don't watch it anymore.
I see it occasionally, but this wasn't because I saw it. This was because of what was in the news a few days ago. He wants to run Canada. So he gets on Shark Tank and wants to make as much money as anybody can make. So he makes a ton of cash. And then he wants to follow the Donald Trump model. I've made all my money. Now what do I want to do? Let's run a country. Now, I tell you that to show you where secular people are headed, where their thinking is. Money, power, this life, this is it. And if you hurt me, just as you mentioned, I'm going to go after you. I'm going to try to hurt you. Why? Because my focus is on this life. That's where I'm centered. That's where I'm focused. And if you're not a Christian, that's true for everybody. You don't have to be a billionaire. You don't have to be a president or a presidential wannabe. That's where your life is focused. And when you go back and you look at Mr. Mike, where was his life focused? Big house, big car, family, everything is great. Retire and live in luxury and everything is wonderful. That's where people are. And yet people can be brought to the point where they realize where that is not what life is all about. What Jesus say? If you gain the whole world and lose the soul, you haven't profited anything.